You're listening to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef. And for the next hour, we're going to tackle popular nutrition topics from a scientific lens, promoting fact over fiction with no BS.
Welcome back to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I am registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef, and you're listening to No BS Nutrition. Crank it up.
What is this, like a radio station? Okay, so I just learned something recently that I didn't know. I think I learned this watching The Office last night, that maybe it's not even legit, but when you say cut, like when you're filming a movie or a video, whatever, when the director goes cut, like they say cut so that like you know where to cut it when you're
editing. Keep rolling.
Yeah. What? I didn't know that.
I think I knew
that. Okay. I didn't piece together that saying cut is like indicating this is where you cut, like when you're editing, like you cut this out you cut. And so I was watching The Office last night, and it was an episode where Michael was recording some video, and he and Pam was filming it, and he was like, say cut so I know where to edit say cut so I know where to cut it. And I was like, oh my god, that's why you say cut.
And Pam's like, cut.
Yeah, so anyways, that's what I learned this week.
Today I looked for glasses, even though I already had contacts in. I don't know what that means. And I've been using the same password to unlock my tablet for 3 years. Can't figure it out. Don't remember it. I'm locked out of my iPad.
Oh my gosh. Like, and when was the last time you used your iPad? Like yesterday. I thought, like, you know, maybe if you go a long time without using something, you kind of forget it, but that's odd.
No, can't remember it for the life of me. Also, if anyone's listening to this on the bus, you're my people, we're family, I salute you. I've been running for the bus to catch it for the last few days, and it's like, I don't know how to explain it. It feels so vulnerable. Like, everyone around you knows, because they see, you're like, why else would somebody in full clothes and a bag be sprinting? Yeah. They're like, okay, like, good luck with your life. Like, you clearly don't have everything organized. But I don't know, that's just how it plays out sometimes.
Yeah, running for the bus, you know, that's what a panicked feeling. I was such a brat when I was in university. The bus stop, I lived at my parents' house for 2 years in university, and the bus stop was like probably a 25 minute walk from my parents' house. So in the mornings, I would get my dad to drive me down to the bus. He wouldn't drive me to campus, but he would drive me to the bus stop.
That's nice.
And anyways, but there was like so many times where like we were sitting at the stoplights the intersection, and I could like see the bus coming, and the light was red, and I was like, oh my god, I'm not gonna make it. And it's such a panicked feeling. But I guess it's not as vulnerable as running for the bus, because I was sitting in a car and no one could see me like panicking.
Or when you're on the bus and you pull the thing, like, you know, you pulled it, but it doesn't ring the bell.
Can we just talk about anxiety for a second?
Yeah.
This is how you know you have anxiety, when you are terrified to pull the thing on the bus to draw attention to yourself.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
my God.
No one needs to know it was me. Like, pull my arm up down really quickly. Like, I don't want to make any attention.
Look around and then like as discreetly as possible pull the thing and like I don't know. Does that make you so terrified? Like,
I feel like I don't want anyone else to get off on my stop.
No, I would rather more people get off on my stop, because it also gave me anxiety to yell thank you to the bus driver. And again,
if someone doesn't say thank you, I'm like, you hate I don't know, you're terrible. Okay,
but take a step back. Maybe they have anxiety and they don't want to like draw attention to themselves, because that's
okay, they're not terrible.
I would still do it. I would still yell thank you to the bus driver, but it would literally take so much
sure.
courage to like draw Definitely. That attention to myself and be like, thank you. And everyone turn and look at the person getting off the bus. Everyone's and I'm like,
one time I was trying to get off at whatever. Someone had like stopped at one stop and I was the next stop. So I pulled the thing and I go to like step down. There's a guy blocking the way to the door to get out. And he goes, why didn't you get off at the last one, you idiot?
I was oh my God.
Like, I didn't say anything because I was like, I don't have time for this. And right. also, can't I just get off at whatever stop I want to get off?
Yeah.
Like, what is going on here? The bus does something to some people. It changes people. Hannah McGee, I have something amazing to share with you, and we have to thank David for giving us this topic. Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
Really appreciate it. Very interesting BS of the week this week. A little bit neuroscience-y as well.
Cool.
And a food that I never think about. I don't know. Maybe it's a huge part of your life. Actually, your sister was just eating this food. Kiwi.
Okay, kiwi fruit, yes. Funny enough, not funny enough. Anyways, my dad's a good cook and he likes to try new recipes and it looks like from Instagram he made this like chicken and kiwi
jerk chicken
dish thing, yeah. yeah and both yeah. my mom and my sister, they must have all loved it because they both took pictures of it and posted it on Instagram.
That's so funny. I don't have your mom on Instagram, but your dad
my gosh, it was funny. Anyways, okay, continue. Kiwi.
Well, if your family was eating kiwi in the evening, maybe they were trying to have a good night's sleep, because that's today's BS of the week. Is apparently, here's the tip, the BS tip, eating two kiwis, one before, by the way, I can't even imagine eating two kiwis in a row. They're so sour. Eating two kiwis
I
1 hour
kiwi.
Before. I'm okay. Eating two kiwis 1 hour before bedtime on a daily basis is linked to considerable improvements to both sleep quality and quantity. It also helps you fall asleep faster because kiwi fruit is rich in serotonin, the happy hormone. There's about 6 million things wrong with those sentences. But anyway, these are the claims.
So where did they
kiwi
come
helps
from?
You sleep. Incredible question, and I will get to
oh
that.
okay.
I found a study from 2018, pretty recent, called Fruit and Vegetable Consumption and Their Polyphenol Content Are Inversely Associated with Sleep Duration, Prospective Associations from the UK Women's Cohort Study. Okay, so what basically in other terms, they found that eating fruit like kiwi, oranges, pineapple were actually associated with shorter sleep. Not completely surprising, because you would actually think like full of sugar, like carbohydrates, like maybe it's going to give you a little boost of energy mm-hmm. in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it wasn't a very significant effect that they found. But if anything, it was that they found that you actually slept less.
Right.
But either way, probably not a huge effect. I don't know. It's just like eating fruit at night. It's just, I mean, you just have to think of what's actually inside the food. Like the majority of it is going to be carbohydrates, right? Anyway, so let's keep talking about other things to do with kiwis. So there was this other study that looked at the effects of kiwi fruit consumption. I mean, I was surprised to see that this was in literature in students with chronic insomnia symptoms. Basically everyone at university, I guess, or college or high school, a randomized controlled trial. So this was from 2017, and they looked at 74 students that had insomnia-like symptoms. And, you know, like the other paper's title alluded to, kiwis full of different plant molecules. Some of them are called polyphenols, there's antioxidants, flavonoids, which we've talked about before, these plant compounds that, you know, mediate, I don't know, they probably have some sort of like biochemical effect on the body.
Okay.
And they're found in excess in lots of fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Kiwi also has melatonin, which is actually a derivative of serotonin. Okay. And serotonin itself is derived from tryptophan, the amino acid. Anyway, so this is kind of like the... So I guess it's kind of coming from, and this is one piece of where the whole kiwi sleep thing is coming from, kind of coming from the whole turkey makes you sleep thing. You know? Right. Turkey has tryptophan. Tryptophan cross like apparently gets into your brain and puts you to sleep.
Yep.
Which we know from a few... years ago, you and I looked into this because we just kept talking about it back and forth. And we're like, let's just settle this.
Yeah.
And we know it's not true. It's partly people, you know, get sleepy during Thanksgiving because they're eating a huge meal, very likely, if they're doing so. And that makes you sleepy rather than whatever tryptophan is actually getting into your bloodstream, which, in fact, we found out wasn't significant enough and probably didn't cross the blood-brain barrier to actually affect your brain and, you know, the sleep regions in your brain enough to actually cause sleep just due to the level of tryptophan. So one thing that I found from a sleep expert kind of talking about this topic is they say a lot of people feel sleepy after a big meal because they overeat and the rate of change in their blood sugar stimulates insulin, which sedates them. Which is very interesting for me to hear. So that was new to me. It's not just what you eat. It's also the patterns of eating that make a difference. So that was interesting. So in this study, students had either a fruit, like a pear or something, or a kiwi, 1 hour before bedtime every day for 4 weeks. What a weird study to sign up for. And what they found was that results showed that on a total of 2 out of 12 sleep quality outcomes, like various things, there was an effect of kiwi, I guess, increasing sleep quality. This was 2 out of 12 outcomes, and almost all of these outcomes were self-reported by the people.
Right.
So really like very few objective measures being done.
Yeah.
To know, I guess, like valid quantifiable degree at all. So, and part of it is also like, maybe some of these people knew about this hypothesis just like from the web or like from seeing it on a meme, like someone else. Like so many things could have affected that outcome. And even the outcome was really poor. So that study doesn't really convince me of anything at all.
No.
There was this other study from 2015 called Transient Elevation of Serum 5-HIA, which is serotonin derivative, by dietary serotonin and its distribution in serum protein factors. So basically they were looking at blood levels of this metabolite of serotonin after dietary serotonin was consumed. There is a bit of a peak if you consume dietary serotonin, but it's actually really transient and starts decreasing after 2 hours. And most of what's being picked up is the metabolite of serotonin and not serotonin itself. So you can imagine that it's not really staying stable very long in the blood,
in blood.
So there's really like very little evidence for this at all. I mean, I would say no robust evidence at all. And then Finally, I kept looking around. I was like, where is this coming from? Okay, the whole tryptophan thing. Okay, we know that's not true. Like, where else is this coming from? So there was this article by The Guardian, or in The Guardian, by Amin Saner, called Eat Yourself to Sleep, The Foods That Can Help Get a Good Night's Rest.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd necessarily recommend the article as an actual sleep aid, but I did learn something interesting from it. So eating, this whole eating 2 kiwi fruits before bed thing, came from a 2011 study by Taipei Medical University. Okay. And the study was supported by the world's largest marketer of kiwi fruit, and it had 24 participants. So,
oh gosh,
it basically all came from a funded project by a company that sells kiwi. And I guess they decided to go with the fact that there's, I don't know, trace amounts of serotonin in kiwi, and none of it's clinically relevant, but they're pretending that it helps you sleep.
Oh my gosh.
Hannah just fell asleep.
No, I'm just like, it's just wild how messages can get like cherry picked like that. And then
it's like a game of telephone.
Twisted. Yeah, like a game of telephone. Exactly. Like it just starts with, like you said, this funded small like tiny study and turns into this wide claim about kiwi. So was this like a social media post or something like that?
It was just like a picture. It was like, imagine all those like Facebook posts that
like the infographic
on them
posts.
Or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just like a picture of a kiwi, and it was like, did you know that whatever, a kiwi helps you fall asleep, blah blah blah.
Oh gosh. Wow.
I mean, eat kiwi if you like,
right,
it, but
exactly. I was gonna say, like, there's a lot of reasons to eat kiwi. Like, it's a fruit that, you know, there's other, like you were saying, other the flavonoids and fiber and, you know, vitamins, things like that, that are beneficial. And, you know, personally, for me anyways, I think it's delicious.
It's fine.
But yeah, it's not gonna put you to sleep. That's just silly.
Also, if you have like a true insomniac symptoms, definitely like go to a medical professional and don't go to the produce aisle. Like, it's just not the place to fix that problem.
Totally.
And it's one of those things of like, oh, well, maybe if I stay up later, I'll like fix myself with like whatever, a tab of melatonin or a few kiwis. But if your sleep cycle isn't regular and it's not healthy, aka like you fall asleep with sundown and like wake up with sunrise, like about that, you delaying it and moving around all the time and trying to compensate with supplements is not healthy. Like, that's not a sustainable way to make sure that somebody has a healthy sleep hygiene in the future.
Yeah, that reminds me of, you know, I guess it's a kind of the opposite or on the other end, where people, like you said, they'll take, yeah, a bunch of supplements, or like the 2 weeks ago when we talked about the NeuroGum for energy, like people will buy these products or rely on foods or things like that and, mm-hmm. you know, rely on them as like energy boosters or like, you know, take the mm-hmm. supplement for more energy. But these people have terrible sleep hygiene and they get like 4 hours of sleep every night. And it's like, why spend all that money when you could just prioritize sleeping? Like, why eat right. two kiwis every night if you don't even really like kiwi? Like, but you still aren't practicing good sleep hygiene and trying to go to bed on time.
Or if
and
you
just
need
get
like
a good
actual
sleep.
Clinical help, you need to go for like a
right.
clinical grade prescription.
Or right.
whatever, some sort of
totally,
treatment.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Right, so today's topic, also something that was requested by our listeners. So we, a couple weeks ago, put out a request for topic recommendations for the podcast, and we got quite, you know, some really good responses, and this specific topic was requested quite a few times, so we thought we would talk about it first. So today we are going to be talking about
www. Do you remember that song? www. Do you remember that song?
No.
No? Okay, never mind. I'll show you later.
So what was formerly Weight Watchers is now WW. And we never really, we have not talked about this yet. We did talk about very early on in the podcast, we talked about the Curbo app that was created by WW, but it was like the app for kids, which I didn't actually
look. I think it's still
look.
Around.
Does it still exist? Wow.
Yeah, our impact wasn't good enough.
No, didn't reach enough people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to talk about WW, and they are claiming to be the most holistic approach to weight loss ever. That's what it says on their website. So that's very interesting to me. Now, I feel like, so Weight Watchers has been around for a really long time, like decades. Mm. And so I am really not that familiar with like the origins of Weight Watchers and how it started. I've heard stories of like, you know, my mom's friends or people like that who like, you know, would go to the Weight Watchers meetings, like at the Weight Watchers I don't know what you call them, like clinics, not clinics, but like locations or whatever.
Studio, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. And they'd like go for the weekly weigh-ins and the classes and things like that. You know, and obviously modern day with all the technology, it's now on an app and you track everything on an app. And that's kind of how it works now. Actually, funny enough, though, there is a WW location or like studio here in Moncton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like right by my grocery store. So I drive by it sometimes and I'm like, huh, I wonder if anyone actually goes there. But anyways, so I took a little peruse on the WW website. That was the first thing I did when I started to prep for this episode. And, you know, a lot of the words on the main page of the website, you know, they talk about how WW now incorporates food, sleep, exercise, and mindset. And they say that all of these things matter when it comes to weight loss. And, you know, what I see when I read that is very much, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kind of thing. Point. You know, I see that messaging. You know, it's like, they say they want to help you build healthy habits and go beyond the plate. I think that's what they say on their website. And like, it's just another like piece of the diet industry, or another diet, to me anyways, that has caught on, that like people don't like the word diet anymore. And people, you know, yeah, like we just fad diet. They don't want to be seen as a fad diet anymore. They want to be seen as a lifestyle, because they know
and
that
like
that's
a wellness
what people,
thing.
Yeah, wellness. They know that's what's trendy and that's what people are looking for. So that's the first thing I noticed. And then I looked a little bit more and I saw that the way that it starts when you sign up for today's WW is that it starts with a personal assessment. So I actually went in and did this assessment just to like see what it would, what they would ask and what they were looking for. So, you know, it was pretty standard. Like they said they want to get to know you, and how you think and feel, because they want to learn they want to learn what impacts weight loss for you. And so they make it seem really individualized and personal. But in reality, when I went through it, like it's really a multiple choice survey where like an algorithm is going to spit out like what Weight Watchers plan you should be on.
Sure. And there's probably like very few, like there can't be like hundreds of them that are so catered to people's individual
needs.
No,
there's
three. Okay. That's what I assume.
there's three plans. There's the green plan, the blue plan, and the purple plan. That's what the three different plans are. And I kind of looked into the differences between the plans, and what I found is that really the only differences between the three of them is like the number or like allowance of points that you're allowed each week. And then, so they all have a minimum daily allowance of points. And then certain ones have more free or like 0 point foods than others. So like it says that the purple plan has the most 0 point foods with over 300 0 point foods. So 0 point foods are obviously foods that don't count, and like you can eat as many of them as you want.
Binge on, like,
you know. Right. But yeah, it's like really boring foods like chicken breast, eggs, fruit, vegetables, you know what I mean? Like things that people probably aren't binging on, you know. They're not
sure.
No one's gonna binge on apple slices, like,
right.
Do you know what I mean?
It's calorie, like,
it's like volume food,
dense. Yeah, volume food.
Exactly. Yeah. And then those are honestly like the only differences between the different plans is like the minimum number of points you're allowed and how many free foods or
so
0 point
foods
you have.
So it sounds kind of like, how fast do you want this crash diet?
Right. That's what it
act.
Sounds like to me too. Also one, oh, actually one other thing that varies between the three plans as well is like the, I think there's something called weeklies or weekly points. So these are points that you can, like if you use up all your points in a day and you still have like another meal or you eat something else, you can, you have a certain amount of weekly points that like are, they're like extra points.
Or
like
this sounds like a cell phone plan, but okay.
It is so confusing too. Like I was so confused trying to figure this out. And then the other thing that really stood out to me that I really hated, okay, there's actually a lot of things I hated. But there's something called Fit Points in WW now. So Fit Points, oh my God, it makes me angry just saying it, but so you earn Fit Points by doing physical activity, and each physical activity, and you can track this on the WW app, and each physical activity you do is valued in a different amount of Fit Points. And you have to, so you can turn your Fit Points into like smart points or food points, but you have to reach a threshold of Fit Points to turn them into like points to add to your daily allotment. Right. So basically, like, you earn Fit Points by doing activity, and you can turn them into eating points. So it literally translates into you earning your food with exercise. And you have to hit a specific threshold and do a specific type of activity to earn more Fit Points. It's just so, like, that's so disordered, like, on its own. Like, just having to literally, if you're hungry, but you're like out of points, you can be like, okay, so I'm hungry, but I don't have any points left. So if I go do this exercise, I can eat more. And it's just like, what?
It's that whole thing of like, you know how in maybe, was it last episode that we were talking about? Yeah, we were talking about mono diets, and we were talking about how the Penn and Teller guy said that like he went to a potato only meal because he needed like a really strict regimen. It's like, I think I can't speak for almost 8 billion people on the planet, but I think a lot of people think that they need like such extreme rigidity in order to, I don't know, reach some sort of outcome. But this kind of plan makes it so that like you're always thinking about your food all day. Yes. It's like your full-time job.
Yes, exactly. So I was like obviously doing some research on the internet, looking for more information about WW, and I found a YouTube video from another dietitian. Her name's Colleen Christensen, and she is on Instagram. Her handle is like @nofoodrules. And so she's like, her focus is like intuitive eating and you know, a non-diet approach. And she tried WW for like a day and documented it in her YouTube video just to like give her opinion and say, you know, experience it, say what she thought about it, because she, you know, she gets a lot of questions from clients about it and her audience. So she's very much someone who, you know, she said she's very confident in her relationship with food. She eats intuitively. She listens to her body. She doesn't let any kind of external factors influence her food choices. And she tried it for a day, and like she ran out of points like at lunchtime. And she like, she had her lunch and she had no points left by noon. And she was saying that like, even in that one day, like having to track her food and see how many points it was, like was making her second guess, like whenever she felt hungry, like when she was hungry for an afternoon snack, you know, mid-afternoon, and she'd already used up all her points, like she said that she had the thought cross her mind, like, what, you know, am I that hungry? Like, could I just wait until dinner? Like, you know, like it was just like, super, like it really was just detaching her in that one day already from her body's cues. And exactly, she was thinking about like, just like constantly thinking about food, like, should I eat or can I eat this? Or like, it's just like, she said, like, it was just ridiculous how even being just trying it out for one day, like affected her that much. And she was just like second guessing her choices. And, you know, she said physically she felt good. And like what she, you know, she was eating normally, like she normally eats day to day. She wasn't changing how she ate on like to fit within any points or anything. She said physically she felt great. She felt like she was feeling her body and, you know, eating like she normally did, but like just the fact of like seeing the points associated with the foods and running out of points by lunchtime, like was just already messing with her head.
I think some people's answer to that would be like, oh, well, you can just eat 0 point foods. Mm-hmm. And actually, after a while, you just get used to counting. But the problem that, like, what the data actually tells us, and I'm sure we'll keep talking about this, is that that doesn't really end up being sustainable. And it's just part of this whole binge restrict cycle. Well, on the long, on the span, it can, and binge restrict doesn't have to be day to day. It can be on the span of months or years.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, you bring up a really good point that just eating or just like filling up on 0 point foods, it might work in the short term, but that's not taking into account satisfaction and like mm-hmm. satisfaction. And, I think Alyssa Rumsey talked about this a little bit on when we had our interview with her a couple weeks ago. And like satisfaction is so important in what you eat. And that comes from eating what you want to eat, not just like, yeah. you know, food to fill up your belly, like eating foods that actually are on your mind, that you're craving, that sound good to you, that taste good to you. Like that all plays like a role in how full you right. feel and how, yeah, your relationship with food and it's literally, and it has to do with like your brain. Like I think because when you get that, like when you eat something you want to eat, I don't know the exact like, but it, when you eat something that you want to eat or that you're craving, you get that like release of like happy hormones and that
right.
also.
And you kind of habituate to that signal that's like saying, oh, I really want cake. And if you actually give yourself cake, then that signal like goes down.
Right. Exactly. You've satisfied that. Whereas like, if you're like, oh, I really want cake, but I'm going to eat bell peppers instead because they're 0 points. Like you don't get that same satisfaction.
I think some people like do make food their full-time job, which is like, I don't know, that doesn't really work for me. And I maybe like some people will look to celebrities or something, but they hire people whose full-time job it is to like just tell them what to eat, when to eat, and when to exercise, so they don't have to think about it. Like there's right. so much privilege that can go along with that kind of like eating behavior that WW is promoting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I just like when that dietitian said that even just one day of WW was already messing and like messing with her head and her relationship with food, it was just like, and what's sad to me is that it gets like those having those thoughts and like second guessing, if you should eat a snack or saving up points like for the end of the day, those things are masked as like healthy or do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? They're they're seen as like healthy habits in our society. But in reality, like that's disordered. Like if you're hungry and you like purposely don't eat because you don't have enough points or whatever, you don't want the calories or whatever it is, like that's a disordered eating habit.
And it just makes me think of the Eat Like a Bear, like Amanda Rose talking about how, well, yeah, I get hungry right. at night, but I just force myself not yeah. to eat. And yeah. I'm sure her diet probably fits with the Weight Watchers plan because it's a very low density food based diet.
Yeah, so like volume eating. Like, yeah.
Yeah, volume eating. And so I don't know, like there's so, I don't know, obviously there's so much evidence to the contrary of these kinds of diets being good for us or being sustainable, but at the same time there's so much pressure from society for us to like being normal is dieting almost, like, oh, if you're not
no,
on a diet,
no,
like,
exactly what? Dieting is so normalized in our society that it's like if you're not dieting you're not, you know,
I mean,
pursuing
to the
health.
Extent that Weight Watchers has WW branded food in our grocery stores, right? Like it's,
oh my
it's
god
everywhere.
Yeah, there's yeah, like bread, it's funny,
there's another, desserts, bread, yeah. Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's a lot,
it's everywhere.
Yeah, so, and it's sad that it's normalized and it's like seen as healthy living rather than disorder because dieting is a symptom of disordered eating, and eating disorders as well. You know, if you have a history of frequent dieting, and I would say WW counts as a, you know, fits the bill as a diet, that's a symptom of disordered eating.
I feel like their questionnaire should start with, like, why do you think you need to lose weight? Like, that should be...
Right.
That should be a really important question.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. That actually was something that was a red flag to me when I filled out the little personal assessment, is that, like, they didn't... They asked me for my height and weight, but they, like... And, you know, I'm very privileged in that I'm someone that, you know, when people would look at me, they wouldn't say, oh, she needs to lose weight. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And there's a lot of people out there like that, that still feel like they need to lose weight. And diets like this capitalize on that because they don't say, like, you know, based on your height and weight, you don't need to lose weight. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And so that's potentially harmful as well, that, like, even some, you know, someone could even go,
they don't even go, like, the short distance of, like, even following the, albeit very arbitrary, guidelines of what BMI is.
Right, exactly.
To say, like, oh, you fit in a, whatever, the typical category, so maybe consider not needing to use our program.
Yeah, exactly. I thought
not
that was
that's the perfect way to whatever go.
No,
about
I agree.
This, but they don't even do that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That stood out to me. And then one last thing I'll say before I hand it over to you to talk about some studies is that on the main page of their website, they have a couple like celebrities that obviously are ambassadors or spokespeople for WW. And one of them is James Corden, the host of the late show and like the carpool karaoke, those kind of, those little things, not right. little very popular, but there's a video and of him and you know he talks about the last 15 years, you know, every January 1st he says he's gonna go on a diet, he's gonna lose weight, he's gonna quote get healthy, but he never sticks to it. And he said, you know, this year he really wanted it to be different. So he reached out to WW. I don't know how much of this is legit. Like,
I'm sure they reached out
right,
to him.
Right, exactly. Like,
yeah.
So he says he reached out to WW and asked them for help. And he said that they told him that his problem is that he keeps going on a diet and that WW is different because it's about wellness and health rather than just weight. But, like, I just want everyone to know that...
Honey, you were called Weight Watchers, like, 2 minutes ago.
Right, exactly. and anything, like, we don't really... We're not really clear on what constitutes a diet. But to me, and again, like our conversation with Alyssa Rumsey a couple weeks ago, anything that is... an external factor controlling or telling you what to eat or how much to eat or when to stop eating is a diet. So if you have 23 points in a day and you have to stop eating after 23 points, or you have to earn more points through exercise in order to eat more, that is a diet. Like, that is a very much an external factor telling you what, how much, when to eat, whatever. It's not encouraging you to listen to your body and honor your hunger cues and nourish your body and fuel your body. Like, anyways, it's a diet.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I don't know. I personally, I don't mean to ever judge anybody who's making any sort of like fitness decisions at all. But I think the main message that we want to keep getting across before I get into this paper is... The traditional and very popular ways of going about, quote, fixing your health are not always healthy options. And WW is definitely one of those, like, full of disordered behavior programs.
Yeah, there's just so much potential for developing a poor relationship with food and your body and your weight and even, disordered eating or an eating disorder and binge eating. I've heard from a lot of people that Weight Watchers was like the root cause of their binge eating issues because, you know, people would save up points and eat a lot less during the day so that they'd have more points at night. But then by the time the night came, they were so hungry that they felt like they couldn't stop eating, or even after the end of a week of only eating whatever, like 23 points a day,
right?
They were so hungry that, you know, the minute they ate one thing that was like, you know, quote bad, it was just like a downward spiral into binge eating. So right. Yeah. I agree. I'm not like, people can, you do you, people can do what they want to do. You have complete, you know, choice and autonomy over what you do with your body, but we're just, I'm just evaluating this from a professional mm-hmm. lens
yeah.
and seeing a lot of red flags. That is all.
Definitely. Okay. So I found a couple interesting papers, but I think maybe we'll probably spend the majority of the time talking about one of them. I found quite interesting, and I want everybody to stick with me through this, because I think once we finish talking about the paper as a whole, it's going to make some, I don't know, it's gonna, I guess, like pull the curtain, what's that phrase, draw the curtain over,
pull the curtain
WW
back.
Pull the curtain back, thank you, over WW a little bit. So I hope I can get that message across. This is actually a really recent study. It was just published in 2020, and it's called Behavioral and Psychological Strategies of Long-Term Weight Loss Maintainers in a Widely Available Weight Management Program. And they're talking about WW there. So, I mean, we've talked about this before. We know maintaining weight loss, especially through crash diets, is like near impossible. Like, it's about 5% of people are able to maintain, on average, like 5 pounds of mm-hmm. weight loss over several years. Like, it's very rare that people do more than that, because crash diets are not sustainable methods for weight loss. And successful maintainers, people who maintain weight loss, obviously have to maintain a low calorie diet and have to continuously maintain higher levels of physical activity. They also have to have more restraint to their hunger, like we've talked about before, and more self-monitoring, like constantly thinking about your food all the time. So these are the people that end up maintaining some weight loss. So this study was interested in looking at what is so different about these people that they're somehow able to sustain these behaviors for the long term. Like, what makes somebody a weight loss maintainer? And they used WW as a program to investigate this. And they looked at, so this is not an incredibly, it's one valid way, but it's not the end all be all of outcomes. So they looked at various questionnaires to identify behaviors and psychological strategies that seem to work for these people. So of course, this all relies on self-report. So I want everybody to take this with a grain of salt. So they enrolled just under 5,000 people who are weight loss maintainers through WW. And remember, even though that's a huge number, that is 5,000 people. That only represents, of the population, 5% of like the whole population of people who went through WW. And I'm not smart enough to do that math very quickly. What would 95% be? I'm going to throw a number out there, 5 billion. I don't know. Anyway, that's just so wrong. 5 million. So these people maintained at least 9 kilograms of weight loss for 3.3 years. Okay, so that was one group. And then their other group was 528, what they called weight stable people who had an above average BMI and who were not able to maintain any weight loss for over 5 years.
Okay.
So they're thinking, maybe there's something here, like maybe there's some sort of practice that's being engaged that's different.
Right.
So here, what did they find? They found that, there's a lot to critique here. I'm like, obviously. Okay. So one thing they said was that there were more frequent healthy dietary choices. And what I have to say to that is that healthy dietary choices are complicated. And we talk about this a lot. Regardless of the whole, like, what's healthy for one person might not be healthy for another. Regardless of that, I want to reiterate to people that we're not always in control of what we eat or how much we eat of it. It's kind of like, if you go back to our conversation on the new Canada, what is it? Obesity Canada guidelines. We know that there's literal rewiring of the brain when people suffer from health consequences due to excess weight gain. Not just when somebody has excess weight gain, but when they also have detrimental health outcomes. There's actual brain rewiring. So healthy choices doesn't necessarily mean willpower, which I think some people, that's kind of where people go, right? So I hate that trope that people who make quote healthy choices have more willpower. That's not the case. They also found, like I said earlier, there was more frequent self-monitoring. And what I have to say to that sounds really stressful to be constantly monitoring yourself all day. And they found that they had various whatever psychological coping strategies. And part of that was that they were able to maintain habits for longer. So people who maintain weight loss have this tendency to perceive that there's actually very little effort in maintenance. That was kind of interesting. That their habits were kind of ingrained in them. And there was less perceived effort in automatically picking. They say healthy, and I say reducing your calorie intake and forcing yourself to exercise more. Those people kind of found that easy. It's really complex to develop habits. And complex behaviors require a lot of work for them to develop. I don't know. I mean, this is totally like me thinking outside of the box here. They weren't talking about this in the paper, but I wonder if there's just some people who are more predisposed to picking up complex habits quicker and like forcing themselves to adjust to them. Whether that doesn't mean that they're not less stressed by them or that mm-hmm. there aren't negative health outcomes, mm-hmm. but I don't know. Maybe there's something there. And something else that they found was that some people ended up, I don't know, they had this mindset where they continued to think about past what they called successes, and that ended up driving their behavior. So it was kind of this like feed forward mechanism of like we were talking about in the last episode, like some people will look at the scale, see the number go down, and that kind of drives them. And more than often forces disordered behaviors, like forcing yourself to diet.
Perpetuates it. Yeah.
Probably you don't need to. They found, this was interesting, I thought, they found no difference in self-kindness, mindfulness, WW is huge on that, and acceptance strategies. So I kind of thought, like, is this good? But kind of what it reaffirms for me is you could be disordered at any size. Just because you have a low BMI and you don't look like somebody who the general population would say needs to lose weight doesn't mean that you don't have disordered eating behaviors. Anybody can have disordered eating behaviors. You can have acceptance of your body and have disordered eating behaviors at any size. So
yep.
I think that's actually quite a realistic outcome that they didn't find those differences. And it would mean that, you know, there are people who probably have a lot of self-kindness and people who do not have self-kindness in both the weight loss maintaining group and the stable weight group, which I think probably makes sense in the end. So that kind of like throws the WW idea that, I don't know, like mindfulness is really going to help you, whatever, maintain this like terrible diet.
Yeah, well, lose weight.
You can
yeah.
be mindful at any weight. Like that's not a special thing that what a thin people get to own. So on the psychological thing, again, like I said before, they were thinking about past successes. They talked about this in the paper, remaining positive in the face of weight gain, which again, because all of this is self-report, you can imagine that, I don't know, some people might be making this up or maybe they don't believe it deep down, but like at the surface, they're like, yeah, I'm really happy because I lost weight. Not I'm really happy with my health. Like they weren't asking those kinds of questions. It was all just like perceived happiness about their weight loss or about their diet.
Right.
So they didn't really look at that kind of stuff. They didn't look at satisfaction, stress levels, mental health. I find this paper didn't dive too deep into disordered eating behaviors, which self-monitoring might be, like we talked about earlier. So basically what helped people maintain weight loss was keeping low-calorie foods accessible, setting daily calorie goals, recording those calories, which, by the way, WW is basically recording calories by counting points. So that's not a whatever rule that they get to, or like success that they get to like lord over people. Daily recording of calories and measuring foods, which, you know, dieting, that's not going to work for a lot of people. It may not be disordered for everybody to do some of these things, but on the whole, it's troublesome for everybody. And again, time and time again, the science shows that this is not something that the majority of the population becomes successful at. And in fact, it ends up causing a lot of problems. So I would ask people also to remember that all this is correlative, not causative stuff. So they actually looked at this after the fact, not through the process of weight change in real time. So we can't know if the things that they reported, psychological or otherwise, were actually a result of the weight loss or resulted in the weight loss. You know, so maybe losing weight, people are subjectively more happy about their diet, but maybe they weren't happy to begin with. You know what I mean? It doesn't necessarily mean that you were a well-adjusted person the whole time, which I think this paper was kind of trying to sell me, which I wasn't buying. And members of each group were obviously self-selected, so there could be a lot of bias there. You know, they weren't like triaged in a very intense way. It was just like, if you fit these criteria, you can come in. There also probably are a million unmeasured variables that weren't accounted for: socioeconomic status, ethnic diversity, etc. However, they say that statistically they did account for socioeconomic status and ethnicity in these statistics. But these things, like we talked about in season one, with the Mediterranean diet, could be related to other variables that aren't being controlled that still might be affecting the outcome of this study. Like, for example, living in a food desert. I'm sure there's a million other things too. So the weight loss maintainers, I thought this was interesting, were 34% more likely to make over $75,000 a year in a family income. That's quite a big percentage. The weight stable people were 16% more likely to make less than $25,000 a year in income. And we know income has a lot to do with our food selection. We talked about that in season one as well, or maybe season two. Weight loss maintainers were also 23% more likely to be married. I don't know if that has something to do, I don't know, maybe there's something there about like living with a partner or something. Again, this is all correlative. I'm not saying I'm Nancy Drewing this through these statistics, but it was interesting to me. The control group also was more, so the weight stable group rather, was more ethnically diverse than the weight loss maintainers group. So the weight loss maintainers group was 94% white as compared to the weight stable group, which was 83% white. So it seems like there's this like undercurrent of like rich white privilege that might be helping drive, that might be driving successful weight loss maintenance through the WW diet. So basically what I'm trying to say is success through weight loss, whether it's through WW or not, is also probably under the control of so many things beyond what you do yourself. It has to do with your environment, your statuses of whatever, socioeconomic status, etc. There's so many things that go into it, and it doesn't seem from this paper to me like there was really anything amazing about the weight loss maintainers, other than it just sounds like they were just forcing themselves to stick with disordered eating behaviors.
Like, to me, how, I don't know, like, how beneficial is it to maintain weight loss if you're still, like, or, and are you still maintaining weight loss if you're still
on the diet?
Yeah, if you're still on the diet, if you're still counting calories and self-monitoring all the time and, like, constantly thinking about food, and is that really maintenance or, like, is that still dieting? To me, that's, like, you're still dieting.
If you're, you're still going through the motions of whatever this quote lifestyle changes, you're still involved in those disordered eating behaviors. I wouldn't necessarily like count that as a success
No,
I wouldn't count it as a success. Yeah.
No, not at all.
I guess I'll say very quickly, there's several papers out there on WW, and I don't think anybody will be shocked to hear this, but they're very rarely well-controlled, and a lot of the outcomes are self-reported. So there's definitely a lot of bias involved in the data collection. And a lot of them are funded by people who sit on WW boards. I came across a few of those studies where they were, in fact, like kind of not necessarily like even not maybe not necessarily funded by them, but like people who work at WW were also working on the paper or were working on the study.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's interesting. So, yeah.
There's a lot of, people are trying to create knowledge without actually finding out the truth, I think. And I think that's pretty common in like weight loss research.
Man, I'm getting, I mean, obviously we don't recommend diets and dieting, but I'm like feeling down that like
I know, me too.
That we like, there's just so much diet culture out there, and that every episode we end and we're like, would not recommend, like do not do that. And it's like getting sad that there's just so much out there that everyone has to navigate in like the health and nutrition and wellness world.
I hope if anything we're giving people we're helping people arm themselves with like the knowledge to, like, when they come across this kind of stuff, they can be like, oh, well, actually, I know that there was whatever study, and what I'm reading in this magazine is actually whatever, just a lie. It's just public relations nonsense.
We'd love to hear what you guys think. Has anyone tried WW? What was your experience? Did you try Weight Watchers? I'm curious to hear, because I know it's so popular. So we would love to hear your experience. So maybe write in, send us an email, DM us on Instagram or Twitter. We would love to hear from you. Wrapping up this episode, I have one question for you, Tarek.
Yes?
What's been tasty for you this week?
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. You know, I actually have a really tasty thing. I'm really excited to share it with you. So, do you know the loaded ladle at Dalhousie?
Yes.
So, They got this grant to do something they're calling Loaded Ladle TV. And they've been getting Dal students to come make a recipe on Instagram Live. And they've sent out free meal kits to students who've signed up to get the ingredients for that recipe, so those people can watch live and make the recipe at home. So I'm the quote guest chef tomorrow. I'm so excited. And I'm going to make some homemade sweet potato ravioli with the tahini sauce. I'm really excited.
Oh my gosh. That is so fun.
And I think it's going to be really funny too.
I love that. I want to participate. Oh my gosh. I know. That sounds like so much fun.
You should, if you have time.
I can join. So it's not just for like Dal students?
Anyone can watch it. Like if people have the ingredients at home, they can follow along too.
Okay, cool. I'm just over here going to ask myself what's been tasty this week.
I'm so sorry. I'm just thinking about myself because I'm such a star now. I'm going
no,
on
I'm just
Live
like
with 20 people are going to be
this
watching
episode
tomorrow. I do really want to know. I have to say also another one of my tastes is your hair looks great. And I want to say what's been tasty for you?
Mine's not as exciting as yours, but I have been, it's just something I've been eating like every single day that I am just really enjoying right now. It's really not that exciting, but every morning I have been waking up, having my coffee and enjoying my delicious bowl of oatmeal. Now,
oh yeah, I love oatmeal.
So I don't know. I know like everyone has their different ways that they cook their oatmeal or the oats that they use or whatever. So what I do is I cook my oats. I use like regular large flake rolled oats. I don't use quick oats or steel cut oats. Oh. I use rolled oats. And I cook them in milk. So not water, milk. So much like creamier and yeah, you do that too. Yeah.
I do that too. Yeah.
And like I use cow's milk because I just, the protein, the fat in it just helps sustain me. Yeah. So that's what I use. I cook it in milk and then I add brown sugar. I add sliced banana. I add a spoonful of peanut butter and a sprinkle of chopped pecans and raisins. Oh my gosh, it's
yum.
So good.
Yum. Yeah, that sounds so good. I love raisins.
Yeah, I do too. And I love my oatmeal. No, they definitely don't. Okay, well, if you guys want to try my oatmeal recipe, and
send us pictures.
And check out Tarek's cooking video on the Loaded Ladle?
Loaded Ladle, yeah.
Loaded Ladle. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this episode. Follow us on social media. Our links are in the description for this episode. And I think I covered it all.
Have a Gorgina day, everybody. Bye.
Bye.